Parenting's hard, you don't know what to do. You're blaming your kids, but it's probably you. You love your kids and that you can trust. Just remember your kids don't suck.
Welcome to Your Kids Don't Suck, cultivating closeness with your children through non-coercive conscious parenting. We're your hosts, Kara Tedstone and Rathia Lee. Let's dive in and grow together.
Well, I had this thought that I could ask your advice because I really want to. I don't really do parts work with Tori, but I really want to do some more. I have a couple times, like maybe 5 times in her life.
Yeah,
and it's been really good. And when she was really little, she had a part called Name, and Name was the angry one, and I would be like, "Oh my God, Name is here!" You know. So I had this thought that I could ask your advice on how I might work with her parts, but I don't want to reveal anything really personal about her.
Yeah, like what she's specifically going through.
Yeah.
Well, talk to me a little bit about like what you're envisioning, because we're talking about externalizing emotions. For people who are listening, it's a metaphor, parts work, I guess, in a way. I guess Dick Schwartz talks about us having multiples. That's the theory. That's the approach. It's about working with unconscious material that like manifests itself as different personalities, multiple parts of us. But there's also like clients who I work with who don't like to think about it like that. They think that's almost like too far out into the, you know, stratus. They're like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I buy that. So like there's ways to frame it.
Well, I wasn't talking about adults who have all this resistance. I was talking about working with parts of our kids, like a regular person who's not a therapist.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want people to know that, like, what you just said about Name, it being an angry emotion, it's kind of like the movie Inside Out. Like, for parents who are new, and I have clients who are new, and if you're like, I don't know about that, I don't know, then that's a great way to look at it, that, like, you can work with your kids' feelings in this way. And the point of it, the at its root, is externalizing it. How can we get it into a dialogue? How can we, like, bring it out into the external? Because right now, it's internal. So parts work is about naming it, bringing it into the room and communicating with it, and to make it feel validated, not like it needs to be exiled, to be suppressed.
Right.
We are therapists and we have the language and we have the modalities and the training, but it is so true that like you can do parts work with children. And in our play episode, we talked about it, but we didn't explicitly name it. But when we talked about the puppet,
right,
that's doing parts work. That's externalizing feelings through, you know, a material, like an external material.
Right. And you can't ask your kid to talk about their feelings and their parts if you're trying to fix something. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
If you're trying to get them to clean their room and you're like, let's talk about the part that doesn't want to clean their room, you know, and it's because you have a secret agenda to get them to clean their room, that's not going to work. Your kid's just going to resist it and feel controlled just like anything else. So I just wanted to think of like an example with Tori, who is almost 13, because I think it would be really great to talk to her parts a little bit. She told me the other day, you're obsessed with parts, Mom. I said, I am obsessed with parts. I'm obsessed with my parts. I'm obsessed with my friend's parts. I'm obsessed with Will's parts.
I know.
So she knows that it's in the air.
That's the problem with going down this rabbit hole. It's like once you see that, you kind of can't unsee it. Once anybody starts working with IFS, it's like people typically become obsessed.
Well, right.
It's such a good way to frame emotions and experiences.
My daughter is almost 13, and so she's going through a lot of deep personal things, and I don't want to share any of it without her permission, and I don't have her permission right now. So I'm going to make something up for Kara to give me advice about, because I want to work with my daughter's parts. So my daughter doesn't mind taking a shower, but let's just say she hated to take a shower, which many, many children do of all ages, okay? So Kara, what if my kid really hated to take a shower? And I got really curious and I was like, hey, I want to talk to your part, the part of you that hates to take a shower. I'd like to interview her and find out what's going on with her. And I could even have a microphone if you like. So part that hates to take a shower, tell me more. Tell me more why, how much you hate it and why. And then she would answer, you know, hopefully if she was up for the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say she said something. This is where I get really stuck. Like when she says something critical about herself. I get really stuck when she says something like, well, I'm a stupid idiot, or I'm just a piece of shit, or whatever. That's where I get like really frozen. And I'm like, well, how do I? So I would have to probably stay with, oh, that's what this part thinks, huh? Why do you think that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Any advice around this would be helpful.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, it's just, I think it's a special sort of pain when your kid says something, you know, critical about themselves. It's like a special kind of hell to hear as their caregiver. And the immediate, I think, urgency is to like make that go away, and help them through that. So that's probably what's the felt sense is for the parent at that point. And it's really tough, but to stay with, the part, to stay with what it's saying and getting more information from that is an important thing to do. Because at the beginning stages of introducing these feelings and externalizing them and getting more information from them is to build trust. So if you're coming from a place as a parent to shoo that away, to get that, to move through, to move the energy into like positivity or acceptance of oneself, that part will feel that it's not welcome, that it doesn't have a voice, that it can't feel safe here in that space between you. And you're trying to say to it, like, let's have a conversation. Tell me more what you think about that. I want to hear from you. Those would be good questions, but you'd want to tread really carefully. If you listen to the way that Dick Schwartz does this, like if you can go on YouTube, or there's podcasts where he does parts work with people, you'll see how he kind of treads really lightly and goes really slowly and just has people sort of like try to register where that part is in their body, see if it will tell them anything, you know, take it slow, never pushing, never saying like, what do you mean? Like, come on, tell me more. It's very gentle. Because most often these critical parts, especially the critical parts, I mean, that's the dialogue, is like, you're a piece of shit. And then our other parts will say, oh, shut up, shut up, shut up. No, we're not. No, we're not. Or we got to get up anyway. Stop yelling at me, or whatever it is we say to ourselves to get ourselves out of bed and to move through the day. It's usually like not validating. It's like silencing or suppressing.
You're so smart. I love talking to you, Kara. Because what I hear is, okay, so another part might show up. So I might be interviewing her about the one who hates to be a shower. And then another part might come in and be like, well, I don't know, it's not that bad. Blah, 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 blah. And then.
Yeah, get over it. You know, what's wrong with you? Like, why does everybody else showers? Like, it's gross if you don't shower. Come on. And then there might be another part that's like, fuck that. I don't want to do it, and I'm not going to do it. And, you know, maybe there's a part where it's like, I'm going to avoid. So I'm going to scroll on my phone now, and then I'm going to feel worse after. But like, that's the immediate, you know, that's how I feel when I have to shower, and like, I don't want to.
So what if like there's three parts and they're all fighting with each other? I'm just there to like, listen and be curious. Like there's no need to try to fix it or figure anything out. It'll be like, like, I don't say to the anything to the parts, like.
Yeah, I think mostly what we're going for is, and it would be tough, I think, as a parent to do like this sort of therapy. You know, it's obviously, I would recommend getting a therapist to do it, but for parents who are curious about just thinking about this and trying it out, you just want to stay validating for the most part. You just really want to stay validating, curious, and hearing more and seeing what will come through. So if you're hearing a whole bunch of different conflicting things, you just want to say, wow, yeah, I hear that. On the one hand, this, and on the other hand, that.
Honestly.
Oh my God. Wow.
Right.
How does that feel? And I wonder who's saying that. Is that the, you know, you could try to see if you could get names. Maybe you could say like, oh, wow, that sounds like maybe there's a voice there that has a lot of feedback around how it feels about you. So, and maybe I want to hear more about that. You really hate her. Wow. And you might want to eventually, if you're feeling like the conversation is going well and you know, the child, the person that you're talking to is sharing, you could try to get like a memory or an experience of when they first felt this sensation or this criticism. And you could get into some inner child work or younger.
Like writing that down. When's the first time you have to write myself? Oh, when is the first time you remember feeling
like that, you know? And you'll have people say like, oh, you know, when I was bullied when I was six, somebody bullied me, or it was my parent.
I'm talking about with my kid though.
Yeah, you're talking about with your kid. So yeah. It will be, I think it's tricky for parents to do this work baseline, because what if it is from us?
Right. My child knows that it's fine to say it's from me.
Right, for you.
A relationship, yeah. Where it would say, you know, well, you were a jerk and blah, blah, blah. And you wouldn't listen to me. But I mean, she just does stuff like that all the time.
Which is wonderful. And I think in this case, then you can really you can roll with that. You can be wow, tell me. So it was me. I hurt you. Yeah. And what did that feel like? You know, and you would just get really validated. Keep working with that. And in that way, you can then move to a repair. I think the main goal for all of these parts is to hear from them. So you're getting curious and you're getting collaborative, you're getting connected, you're building trust, you're hearing more, you're validating all of that. And then you're moving to like a place where there's an apology, a repair, some sort of like inner dialogue that explains what one part needs from the other.
Well, you know, like in parts work, there's the self, like, so, yep. I mean, that's what IFS calls it. In my work, it's called the adult that I do, the adult self. I also work with people's guides, their spiritual guides, and Tori has guides. So I could also ask her, what does your guide say about this?
Yeah.
Or I could say, what does your core self say about this? Any words from that part of you, you know, as long as it doesn't seem like I have an agenda.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Like, we don't want to necessarily go to what should we do and get solution focused, even if it's coming from the self, because what will often happen is the self is being over, like it's the parts are overriding, the parts are operating the system. So for me, for example, I have like a really loud inner critic. And so I will operate out of that a lot. And my self energy is like, let's be compassionate, you know, let's not do that. But the inner critic is like, shut the fuck up. Like, that's not what it needs. It doesn't need to be told what to do. It doesn't need a solution. It needs to be heard. It needs compassion. It needs validation. It needs acceptance. It's tired of being exiled. It's been exiled its whole life, you know, it's been suppressed. And I've learned through doing this myself that, you know, my inner critic just needs to have a seat at the table with everybody. And then it will take a step back. Once it feels heard and seen and validated and appreciated, you know, gratitude is like the final step to moving towards a solution in parts work. You want to notice a shift in yourself where you're like, wow, I actually can understand, you know, not only the intention of your job that you hold as a part for me in my system, but also the outcome of it, what it really is, that you drive me, that you motivate me to be better, that you push me ahead to reach my goals. You know, you really are wonderful, inner critic. You really are. Wow. You've also helped me survive.
Right. I want to see my daughter's critic that way.
Yeah. You want to see your daughter's critic that way. That's profound. I love that. We should like sit with that for a second. That's like bringing tears.
I mean, I get the most triggered when she's being mean to herself. That is when I am the most triggered. And I want to be able to be like, oh, that's her protective part. I respect that protective part.
That's so profound.
That part's protecting her for some really good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really want to get that to that place with her, because I can't be her ally in those places.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're her protector too.
Let me just tell you, parents, a really common mistake, and especially as you get into teenagers. My daughter told me the other day, something like, I look terrible in this shirt. And I said, no, you don't. It looks great on you. That is the worst. She hates that. And then she goes, fine, forget it. What she really wants me to do is go, oh, yeah, I hear you. Like, she just wants me to hear her. And then she'll either correct it or she won't. But like, every time I try to fix it and contradict her self-hatred, she feels like I don't get her. She feels like I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's not what she wants to hear. She doesn't want me to fix it. I think I should say, oh God, I understand. I feel like that sometimes. I should just say that.
That's a brilliant thing to say. And like, you don't have to use a ton of language. It's honestly sometimes just like an energy. Like, oh yeah, I really get that.
Yeah. And that's like a real practice for me and for parents is I just saw a really great TikTok of someone saying, if your child's telling you a bunch of all this disturbing stuff at school, she was telling her that her daughter tells her all this really disturbing stuff that kids talk about at school. And she just bites her tongue and she just listens and she doesn't react. And, you know, and she's like, she says in the video, like, if your child is telling you these things, shut the fuck up, which is what we always say. Like, just don't say anything and don't try to teach them your morals and your values. That's not the time. That's not the time. Yeah.
But what's also really cool is that the way that you're feeling about her critical language is the way that she, there's most likely a part of her that feels critical about the inner critic.
Yeah, say more.
There's most likely a voice that she has that says to that inner critic, oh my God, shut up. Like, why are you always yelling at me? Or, you know, some feeling of resistance towards, it's not nice to have an inner critic.
All right.
It doesn't feel good for the system. So whether that's a inner dialogue that's happening, I can really hear mine, but she may have some just anxiousness or frustration, or that gives her some sort of feeling that sends the body a message that, like, we don't want this. This doesn't feel good, this criticism. And so that is a parallel that you can draw with the external of what's happening with you and your child, and the internal of what happens with ourselves. Inner criticism doesn't feel good. So we want it to go away.
Right.
So we will distract. We will, you know, we'll go for, maybe we'll even, you know, put on makeup or change our outfit or try to feel better. And that's all helpful ways to cope. But in parts work, we want to make friends with our parts. So we don't want to push them away. We don't want to ignore them and avoid them and distract them. We want to bring them in and be able to work with them.
Right.
So we're going a little bit deeper. We're not just doing, you know, behavioral strategies. So with us as parents, like, we take the view that, yeah, we want to validate. We want to hear. We're not like teaching them to continue to be critical, but we're allowing it to happen. And we're being that safe space that they need, because nobody wants to deal with an inner critic. It's horrible and painful.
But you called this therapy, like we were talking about in the beginning, and I guess I'm wanting to bring it to parents not as therapy. I mean, it could be therapy if you really brought them to a therapist who was like really trying to do like an hour of parts work.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of just bringing the framework of parts to witnessing our children, of course, witnessing ourselves. But also, like, when you're witnessing your child, you could start to be like, oh, that's that cute little part of them. And that's that protective part. And that's that, like, very gregarious part. And that's the shy part. And, like, just to start to see their parts as a way to bring compassion, empathy, and then to engage around it, if you can find a way to ask questions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great. I think that's what the Inside Out movie is trying to do. Like, the series of movies, I think that's what they're trying to go for, is to like show kids and parents that we all have parts, we all have sides, and they are all to be embraced. They are all important. They no job, you know, no parts are bad. All jobs are valuable. They all have a place. And so it's so important for us parents, you know, to have some sort of like ability to sit with each part of our kid, to acknowledge it, to be aware of it, to love it. That's unconditional love.
I mean, and that's so necessary if you're going to be doing this philosophy that we're sharing, non-coercive collaborative parenting. You can't be collaborative if you're judging certain parts of your kid.
Yeah.
I mean, we all do it and we all judge ourselves, but that's the framework, is you're trying to come out of judgment as much as possible. You know, I have a really cool thing that happens with me now around feeling ugly, which is I just go, oh, well, there's that part. Actually, I was looking in the mirror yesterday and I thought, oh, I look so bad. I look so old. My face is starting to sag. I don't know, all the stupid shit we tell ourselves. And then I was like, oh, I'm probably looking at myself through a part. That's what I told myself. I was like, oh, I'm probably seeing myself through a part's eyes. I'm probably going to look back at this and think I look fine. Because I now look back at all my photos and I'm like, I'm fine. What is my deal? You know, and my videos, you know, and sometimes also I look shitty and then I'm like, who cares? You know, then there's that. I tell the part, it doesn't matter if I look like shit. It doesn't matter if I'm aging. It doesn't matter if I'm old. It doesn't matter. It's not important. It's not real. You know, but now, like, the body image stuff, I really am able to see it as a part, and it's the biggest relief in the whole wide world.
I know it is. Yeah. And I find that too. Like, I was been noticing a lot lately that, like, even when I have criticism, it's a lot easier for me to move into like a dialogue with that. Like, I can kind of quickly go into like, oh, you're coming up. Like, what do you have to say? You have something to say? And it's like, yes, like, oh my God, you're so lazy. Like, you need to get into action. You're not doing enough. And, you know, I'm able to be like, okay, yeah, you think I'm lazy. Like, all right, I get that. I hear that. You're probably trying to motivate me. I hear you telling me you want me to do some more. Okay, let's see if I can. Maybe I will do a little bit more. Will you kind of let me take that on? Will you take a step back? Like, can you trust me? And it's like, all right, I will. And it does, it quiets down. Like, it's a really quick thing that I do, this practice, and it actually totally shifts my inner monologue.
So cool.
Into compassion.
It takes years and years and years, though. I mean, it really takes time.
It really takes
to
time
to see the part and see it as a part, and then actually know how to respond to it. That's a lot of inner work, because you also have to have experience being with the feelings that are underneath the parts. You can't just be like, okay, blah blah blah. Like, you have to feel where the parts came from and where they were created and why they were created and what their job is and blah blah blah. I mean, thinking I'm ugly, I've had all my life. My part will tell me it's because I'm middle-aged and I'm not like a skinny young thing anymore, but it's really, I've had it forever. It's not, it's, that's what it's attaching to now, but when I was younger it was a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I want to close this topic with saying that what was really great about naming my daughter's angry part as name, she named it name. Because one day I said, oh my God, I know this part. What's the part's name? And she goes, it's name. And I go, oh my God, name is here. Name, what do you want? What can I give you? And she would be like, I don't know. Like, get away from me. I'd be like, that's right, name, you tell me. You know, I would just like really affirm the part. I'd be like, you right, that's right, name. You can get angry. I can take it. And then she would like laugh. She would like laugh. She thought it was so funny. And every time that this certain part of her would pop up, I would go, is that name? Is name here? And she'd be like, yes, name is here and name is very mad. And I'm like, tell me everything. You know, it was just a way of creating like an inch of space between the feeling and reality. It was just like a little space, and it was playful. And it let her see the part as like not being completely taken over by the part, but being able to see the part a little bit at a distance. And it made her feel that part of her was loved and welcomed.
Yeah, that's so amazing. I hope people can take a little bit of that and try to apply it. But I think what you just said about it being like a long process is really true. And having the like theoretical like underpinnings, like if you read the parts book by Schwartz, like, that will really help, sort of like, I think that's kind of necessary to start exploring even this podcast. I think people need to read a little bit about like what it is, why it came to be, like all his research he did. Dick talks about how he, you know, sort of created this modality after he was a family therapist for a long time. And he noticed how family systems reflect the internal systems that he was seeing, kind of, and he'd be like, there's a part of me and I have a part, like, and he'd be like, oh, you have parts. Okay. We all have parts. And it, you know, is parallel to the family systems and how we reenact, and he put it all together. But he does talk about that. That's so true. Cause your inner bonding is parts work.
Yeah. It's inner child work, which
is parts work.
It is parts work, but it tends to be called inner child work, but you talk to all the different little kid parts, and it's the same thing. I'm doing it forever. Yeah. It's just his framework is a little different and a little more accessible in some ways.
I think so. Yeah,
He's framing it. He's normalizing multiplicity. Like, ooh, I know. That's rad. That's really rad.
Yeah, rocks. I have a suggestion for another topic.
Okay, I'm ready.
I'm sure I've talked about this before, but I just need process, I think, or like I need more tools, or I need to find a way to work with my parts, because it's when my kid wakes up at night, I am so beyond triggered. It's like always been like this. I know this is the big three, the sleep trigger, and I just find it so enraging when my kid wakes up at night. I feel bad saying that out loud. I feel like I should be here because I'm on a podcast talking about the parenting we talk about. It's like, I should be at peace. I should be like going in and being like, it's okay. I'm here. You take your time, whatever, whatever will be fine. I don't even, it's going to be fine. I got a mindset. Like, I'm okay. I let it go. Dude, I cannot do that. I get so triggered.
Well, let's just pause for a second. Kara's kid is 2.5, just in case you. And also, you know that I've had sleep stuff with my kid forever, right? So you know you're preaching to the choir.
I'm preaching to the choir. That's why I know this is like a safe space, because you're not going to be like, you are a shitty mom.
No, also, we're doing this podcast not to be perfect parents. We're doing it to model our struggles and how we work with it. That's what we're doing.
And, you know, I will say also, I'm going through a really serious family emergency right now.
Yes, you are.
My husband is not here. He is dealing with it. He's not here. He's not been here for 2 weeks. I'm alone. I have some family staying with, but I'm still like moving through. I'm doing life and I'm dealing with something really, really heavy and scary and bad. So I'm also sick. I'm sick. I have a cough. It's had a cough for a long time. She's been up and down lately at night with the cough. And I just last night, she woke up at 5. So this morning, I guess at 5, and she was just yelling for me. So I go in and I was not pleased. I was not nice. I was not kind. I was firm. And I was like, what is going on? I was like, what is happening right now? She's like, I'm 2. Like, you know, no, it's like this tone and this like voice that I'm using is like not, you know, obviously how I want to show up. I'm right. Like, not in my, I'm just in such like trigger. Like, I'm like,
you're in a part, Kara.
Yeah, I'm in a part. So yeah. Then anyway, I ended up, she wasn't settling. Like, she was just like crying and like, wah. She's like telling me about a bad dream she had. So I'm like, not empathetic at all. Like, I don't feel any empathy. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about her bad dream. You know, my body. I take her into my room, into my bed, and she just didn't sleep. She just didn't sleep again. She was up for the day. And I actually, she was quiet. She like laid quietly with me while I like rested, but she was rolling around. She was like singing, I love you, you love me. Like, you know, whatever. She wasn't asleep. I was just so angry. I was so angry. And I knew when I was angry, I was like, it's not even about her and this. I'm just feeling all of my feelings. I'm having my trauma response. I've talked to you before, Rithia, on the show about my trauma, my personal trauma with my brother dying, and a lot of anger, like a lot of rage, a lot of like, I feel the world is unfair. Like, why me? Like, that's a big part of the feeling with that. And then parenting. I mean, it's all about things, you know, you don't get your way when you're a parent. It's about, you know, you don't get your needs met and you have to make sacrifices. And it's like, that all hits me in the face when it's like the middle of the night and I need to sleep and I'm sick and I'm dealing with shit. I'm like, just enraged. And it's just something I feel like I've tried working with my parts in that moment, but I'm too angry. The self energy is nowhere to be found. There's no dialogue. It's just rage. It's like blinded with rage. And usually what happens is I usually just cry. Like I will like, you know, make sure my kid, I actually usually cuddle with her and I try to be really nice after, you know, after I bring her in the bed, I always like snuggle with her and I try to connect. And that does make me feel better and her little sweet face. And, you know, she's always so darling, but inside I'm like, it's grief. It's anger. It's like just intense pain. So this sleep thing for me, I would love to be able to let go a little bit, at least. Like, the bar for this would be low for me. I don't know if I can fully let go, or maybe that would take, I don't know what that would take.
I mean, it took me years of working on this. I couldn't fix it. I wanted to fix it. I went through better and worse times.
Yeah.
I had my partner help me a lot. And then times where I just had to apologize a lot. And then I had times where it would move and I would not be triggered for short.
Because I have had moments in like, since, you know, because she's 2.5. So we've had many periods of wakefulness. We've had many periods of not. We've had sleeping through the night and we've had not sleeping through the night. It's been a roller coaster for us. It's just, it hasn't been super awesome. It hasn't been super horrible. It's been meh, average. And there have been times where she's been like up and down and up and down. And I've been like, fine. When I hear her at night, I get like that fight or flight response.
Do you have any idea what you were like as a baby? Like, do you have any idea what happened with you?
I don't know, because my parents say that I was very, I slept really well from birth. Like, that's.
They say you just slept all night every night.
That's what they say. I had no real. And if I woke up, my mom's like, you put it in the pacifier and you go back to sleep. Like, no biggie. Which has not been my kid at all. My kids.
So in terms of this moment, do you want to explore this part that gets mad, or what would be useful right now? I mean, obviously the very, very first thing, which you seem to be doing, is to take the judgment off the fact that you're triggered. That's how you have to start. Yes, this is a trigger for you. It's a trigger for millions of parents everywhere.
Yep.
It's really demoralizing that you are triggered over and over and over, and you don't want to be, and you are anyway. And that's why parenting is so insanely hard, because we don't want to be that person, and we find ourselves that person over and over again. We're like, I wasn't going to be like this, and here I am.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to be cold. I wasn't going to judge and blame my kid, but here I am, you know? I wasn't going to shut down and be harsh and cutting or whatever, you know. So the first thing is to be like, I have a good reason. I deserve empathy in this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because it's like you can do this day in and day out, but really just to say it out loud, like, I need to just do more of that. Like, I need to give myself that. I need to find a way. I need to find a way to get into that. Instead of just going with the rage, like the part that's so enraged and triggered. It's
well,
like,
remember
I
you talked earlier, you said when you have a self-critical voice, you usually have another voice that's judging that.
Yeah.
I really sense that you're angry, and then you have a part that goes, you're such an asshole for being angry.
It's like painful. I mean, it goes, it's trigger. It's like, oh my God, fuck, she's up. But then it goes immediately into like, it's like you're a bad parent because your kid is not sleeping through. You should be able to fix this. That's kind of the voice.
Okay.
And then also, and that's not, it's so complicated. It's like, fix it, you idiot. And then the second part is there's like another voice that's like, no, you can't fix it. Let go of trying to fix it. And then it's like, you're such an idiot for not being able to let go. You're so bad at like non-coercive parenting. You're not a saint at all. You're like, you're not a good mom. Like, you're an imposter too, because you have a podcast and like you know, are shit at what you do. So it's just like, and then that's where the tears come, I think. It's like, oh my God, I'm so sad at how I like feel so worthless, which is like often at the core for me with my parts work, is like feelings of worthlessness. Like, you're just shitty. You're shit. You're just shit.
Right. So can we just take a moment and try to bring in compassion for the rage part?
Yeah.
That there is, if you could get curious, there's a good reason why that part feels enraged.
Well, I also think, like, I mean, I'm hearing myself talk and I'm like, nobody wants to be woken up at 5 fucking a.m.
Right. It's hard.
I mean, that's fair. I think, like, my rage part doesn't get that from anyone. Not me. I mean, yes, my husband, we bitch together, you know, we're like, Jesus Christ, kids, whatever. But it's like, from myself, no, it doesn't get that. It gets like, you need to be more stiff upper lip. Like, why the fuck are you even mad? You piece of shit. I think I need to, I need to say out loud, like, yes, it sucks to be woken up at night. There has to be some place for me to be allowed to be angry.
Okay. How does that feel when you say those nice things to yourself?
It's like, yeah, obviously. The part is like, that's why I'm fucking, you know, you don't listen. I'm yelling at you all the time. I'm like, feel me. I'm angry. You're allowed to be fucking angry.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're not letting your angry part be angry.
No. And I have been working on that for such a long time. That's probably my stickiest one.
You know, that reminds me of, I get very needy with my daughter, and she tells me that I'm needy and pulley. And I've really been working on taking the judgment off the fact that I'm needy. I mean, it's just as much a wound as anything else. Like, to be like, oh, of course you feel pulley. Your daughter doesn't want to talk to you about her feelings, and she used to. And so you feel like pulling on her, like, oh, that makes sense. And then it also hits all my mom material, where my mother saw my needs as needy. She saw my need as,
oh, 100%. I think, yeah, I mean, I really relate to that. A lot of people relate to that. Like, of course I can't feel anger. It was never allowed.
Right.
you know.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, being angry as like a young girl, most of us know, is like blasphemous. You have to find another way. You know, you can cry because you're a girl, but like cry in your room. Don't be too loud about it. And, you know, don't freak out because then you're hysterical. Like if you're angry, you're absolutely nuts.
You're so right.
Like, God forbid, you know, you scream or yell or stomp your feet or, you know, have a tantrum, you know, past the age of 2. It's like unacceptable after that.
Right. What do we do? What do we do with all those feelings, man? Like, where the fuck do they go?
I don't know. I mean, I just used to like...
Where do we go?
That's the thing. I think like anger for me was like just never accessible because I would just find another way of like moving through my feelings. I wasn't able to be. But it's funny now, I like find myself being like, ah, like just so angry. The cork has been blown off like after all this time, which is like how I talk about that with my clients. Like a lot of my clients are like, yes, that's exactly it. It's like after all these fucking years of being good.
The cork is flying off. That's what road rage is about.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot. I mean, anger management. Like that's what it's taught. We talk about suppression when we're talking about anger.
Right. I wasn't allowed to feel anything but happy when I was a kid. I got in trouble or isolated or whatever, or abused. I just became a complete and utter and total control freak because that's where I'm like, where did all those feelings go? Oh, I just created addictions to cope with my reality. Since I couldn't feel them, I created endless ways to manage the feelings, to suppress them.
Me too. And I developed a vengeful inner critic.
Right. Right, so that's where it goes. So that's
where it goes. It goes to the internal. Yeah, right. Straight to like, you're the problem.
Maybe you could start some visualizations where you imagine Aaliyah waking up in the middle of the night and you wake up and you're really mad and you could practice talking to that part, being like, of course you're mad. Waking up is terrible and you feel helpless and you can't control it. And like practice it in advance, not when it's like happening, like practice doing that so you get a little muscle going to be nice to that part.
I think that's helpful. I think I need to do that like every single night before I go to bed. I think I need to do like a little tiny meditation where I just do it. Like I just imagine it. Yeah, it's just compassion. I just need to be allowed to be angry about it, I think.
That makes sense. I also think about the word, a lot of what triggered me at night with my daughter was feeling helpless, feeling powerless and helpless. I've been making videos about this lately, about how so much of what causes our really yucky behaviors as parents is that we don't want to feel helpless or powerless.
Yeah.
So getting woken up in the middle of the night, we feel really helpless.
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people are operating out of like this place where they believe they can solve. And true healing, I think, comes from the knowing that there's nothing to solve.
That's what real helplessness is.
Right.
Is no, actually, you can't make it different. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
That is the challenge of parenting, ultimately.
And the whole like ethos of our whole show. That's why like the imposter is like, you are on this podcast, but you can't even do this one thing. You can't even let go of this one sleep thing. Like you're trying to like force your kid to sleep.
We did a sleep one for me. We did like a therapy session for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we didn't resolve it. I just talked about how triggered I was and I never got to the part where I was like, and then everything turned out okay, because it didn't. We ended the podcast like, I'm mid-process, you know?
Yeah. Well, see, I just like, I feel sad because I think like that's what's going to happen here.
Yeah. And it's also weird. Like sometimes things change really fast that feel like they'll never change.
Yeah.
And sometimes some trigger goes on and on and on and you just keep hacking away at it.
Yeah. It's so
what
true.
Happened for us, in case you want to know, my daughter did not want to go to sleep before about 12 or 1 every single night, and I have to get up early and work, and so I would get triggered every single night into my trauma, blah, blah, blah. I couldn't make it different. We tried negotiating in 100 different ways. I just, you know, I was better and worse, but she came to know that I had those triggers. That was the next best scenario, is that she was like, oh, it's 11. Mom's trying to switch parts and act like a freak, you know, like she'd be like, Mom, are you triggered? I'd be like, yes, I'm trying really hard. You know, like we got to know it was my problem. So that was great.
That is so great though, because she's not internalizing it to be about her. So exactly. I don't know. I think it's also just really helpful to process aloud with you specifically, Rithia, because you always remind me that like the intention of this work is to you look at your child and be like, okay, you're giving me feedback. How am I going to work with this stuff to make it not about them and to make it exactly. known that it's not about them? So like,
and none of us had that. None of us had that with our parents. They never just own their shit right in real time and said, this is not about you. This is my stuff. And sometimes when it's age appropriate, you tell your kid what you're triggered about. And I did. I said, you know, I had really hard things happen at night. And when it hits about 11 or 11:30, and especially 12, I'm in memory. I'm in a trauma state. And she knows that about me.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference. Even if I'm acting, she'll be like, you're doing that thing, Mom, or you're acting really weird. And I'd be like, I know I'm trying to change it, and I really can't change it. I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'll be like, okay, I'm going downstairs and I'll try again. I would go take breaks and I do tapping. Tapping is really yeah. great. You know, that's another thing. You might want to tap in the middle of the night when she wakes yeah. you up.
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like I'm in my rage, and then I'm like, oh, but if I just like hold her, I can calm down. Like just and it's every time. I mean, I just like I'll be lying there quietly and she's like quiet. And I'm like turned from her, or I'm like not like, you know, cuddling her. And then I'll just like roll over and like stroke her face. And she immediately is just like, oh, oh, I love you. I love you. I love you. And she just like loves the shit out of me and just cuddles me. And she'll say, I want you to cuddle me forever. And I'm like, okay, I'm cured. All right. I'm fine. I'm over it. Good. So like, if I can move into that, and I think I'm getting better at moving into that. Like we talked about once, holding your child like as if it's your inner child. So I really do try to move into that quickly. But my rage
that's
needs
also
to also
about you
be
coming out of the raging part.
Exactly, exactly.
You're going into your body and love connection and the, you know, attachment. You're coming into your mother.
Yeah.
And that brings you out of the raging child or whatever.
Yeah.
If it's a
yeah.
child.
But I think that the key missing piece though is, like you said, the invalidation of the rage. The like the sheer no time for you.
Right.
Shut the fuck up. You're a monster.
Right.
It's like, no, that's actually not true. Parents who are listening, it's fine to be triggered by your child waking up at night.
Well, and about anything though, we have to start with, you have to start with self-compassion, self-empathy with, I'm triggered right now. And the first thing you have to do is give empathy to the fact that you're triggered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I'm fabulous at this, but that is the assignment.
That's the assignment.
I just want to give an update on my daughter for people who don't know, who are following along. So my daughter has been homeschooled all her life, and then she decided she wanted to go to seventh grade and go to school, public school. And she, as soon as she decided to go to school, we got up at 5:40. We get up at 5:40 every morning. She gets up at 5:40. I get up at 6. She gets up earlier than me and gets ready by herself. Okay. She sets
amazing.
Her clock.
Wow.
And
that is
we
so
go
amazing.
To sleep. We go to sleep by 9:30 every single night now because she is heading up the whole thing.
I just want to say, when we were talking about this, it was months ago. I know this sounds silly because it's like it's happening now, but I swear I knew exactly how this was going to play out. I knew this was going to happen.
You did?
I knew that she was going to decide for herself that like it was going to be important to her to get a good night's sleep, to wake up early, to get ready for school. I knew it. I just could tell by the way that she was so intrinsically motivated to like go to this school, make friends, have a good time, show up, like, you know, she was committed. And I just knew. I just knew that it was going to go like this. I'm so happy to hear that it's like, this is what you were dreaming of.
It's the best now because I get up early and I go work out and I have like hours of the early morning and I love it. And I love going to sleep early.
Yeah.
Anyway, it only took 12 years. And it's so weird because, you know, as your kid gets older, you realize it's going to go so fast.
Yeah.
I tell myself that about all kinds of things. Like she, you know, she doesn't really clean her room, but she asks me to clean her room. So about every couple of days, she'll go, Mom, could you clean my room? And I'll go, okay. Her room is like not, I just shove everything in a basket, basically. And I think to myself, well, if she never learns to clean her room, one day she'll leave my house and she'll figure it out. Like, I just let go of all that stuff. Like, what if, you know, blah, 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 because she's had so many like sudden turnarounds where she suddenly does stuff. Like, she suddenly brings the groceries in with me, or she suddenly helps, participates in cooking. You know, like, you just, it helps. It's so wonderful to stop trying to control and trust the process. It's such a gift.
Oh, it's such a gift, because that feeling of letting it go and then seeing it happen on its own is like, there's nothing more beautiful. I see that all the time with my kid. And I really like savor those moments. I'm like, this is so beautiful. I haven't even asked you to do anything of this nature. All I've done is model it, and you're doing it of your own free will.
And forcing it doesn't have that wonderful feeling when you force your kid to clean their room. I mean, you might get the high of having gotten controlled and then gotten the outcome, but it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing.
Yeah. I always love our talks.
Yeah, I feel like when in doubt, we just show up wherever we are.
Yeah. No, I needed that today, man. Holy moly, that made me feel better.
This has been Your Kids Don't Suck. You can find me, Kara Tedstone, at www.karatedstonetherapy.com. And on Instagram at Kara Tedstone Therapy. On my website, you'll find links to recommended readings and a link to my Reparenting with Mindfulness workbook, available now on Amazon.
You can find me, Rathia Lee, at www.rathia.com. That's RYTHEA.com. There you'll find published books, articles, and music and parenting videos. Also, I'm on TikTok at Rathia Lee. On Instagram at Rathia Lee. You can book parent mentoring sessions with me through my website. And also, I have an Advice from a Loving Bitch YouTube show that helps people heal self-hatred, and that's rathia.com/advice. It is important and essential to put our voices, Rathia and Kara, in a context. We are two white, cisgendered, straight, middle-class women living with financial and societal privilege. Because of this, our perspectives are limited and do not reflect the realities of all of our listeners. This podcast will feature guests with expertise around conscious parenting who differ in race, class, abilities, sexual orientation, and histories from us, to broaden the conversation and reflect the lives of as many people as possible. 25% of the proceeds of this podcast will go to creators of color who have been mentors and influences on our work and in our growth as parents.
If you like our show, please subscribe and stay tuned for more conscious parenting advice and insights. And check out our link tree at linktr.ee/yourkidsdontsuck to donate and connect with us.